I'm in a phase right now of what I consider artisanship, where I'm just focused on getting better and better at my craft and being the best in the world at what I do. And maybe someday there will be a concept or a theme that emerges that I want to share with the world, but I'm not there. Right now I'm interested in helping people to really come to see who they are and what they're capable of and access more of their power, and to do so from a place of freedom, which is much more loving. Because if my mission is anything, it's because when people are doing that, not only are they fulfilled, which is great, they're having more success, which is great, but they're actually creating a better and more beautiful world. Because when they're not creating from fear, they're actually generating something beautiful.
You are listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
So I am joined today by the inimitable JP Morgan Jr. JP, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Matthew.
Now I'm going to attempt to explain in a few sentences what you bring to your clients. And it's quite difficult because it's so much, but here we go. You are an adventurer, a creator, an explorer, both of the physical world and of the human mind. You trained as a mathematician and a physicist. And in your past, you've been a real estate investor, a musician, a global traveler, a web media expert, a martial arts black belt, and a triathlete, amongst many other things. Mm-hmm. And the gift that you bring to people is your ability to leverage your scientific background and your life experience to train entrepreneurs and creative people to take decisive action so they can get their greatest work into the world. Mm. Is that anything like what you do?
Yeah, that's pretty good. I'm going to take some of that and just put it right on my website.
Thanks. It's all part of the service, you know, JP.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And on your website, you talk about this in terms of alchemy. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about that as well. How would you describe that sort of...
That's so interesting that you say that. I just got off the phone with somebody at EO Entrepreneurs Organization about speaking there. And they were talking about their event, Alchemy. And I asked them about the name and what their meaning was behind it. And they're saying, because we bring people from all over the country and put them together in a room. My use of the word alchemy actually links into the way that Carl Jung was using it when he spoke about transformation of psychological individuation. And so there's three major elements in the alchemical process. There is the ingredients you put in, lead and other tincture and things like that that turn into gold. And then there's the container that you put it in. And I would say the heat that you put under the container that transforms the ingredients from like lead into gold. And so in my work, I am creating a very importantly powerful, strong container of relationship between myself and another person. And so I say that my relationships, it's more than friendship. It's more than social. It's a deep, intimate relationship. Oftentimes more intimate than any relationship you've ever had in your life. It's really intimate, and there's a massive commitment. My clients invest anywhere from $15,000 to $100,000, and they pay in full upfront for a year or more of working together. There's an enormous trust. I don't use any written contracts. Everything is eyeball to eyeball, handshake, person to person. And so that trust and that really human, deep, powerful commitment and relationship is a container which enables us to then apply heat. And that heat with the ingredients of that person's life is what creates the transformation. And by heat, it's a metaphor, but literally it means being able to challenge people, call them on their bullshit, say things to them their closest friends wouldn't say to them. Be there and hold tension, allow them. Today I had a client who's just in tears because he's splitting up from his wife of many years. And he didn't want to go there, but he could because of the container and the safety that we create. And by being willing to go there, you open things up and you can have conversations that are transformative. So when I say alchemy, that's what I mean.
I can see that, and I can visualize that, and I can understand how those components relate to like my everyday life. But what do people ask you when they come see you more than any other question? What is the question that your clients ask you? What do they ask you to help them with?
Can I make more money? It's pretty much the most common one. Can you help me make more money?
And then what happens once you do you get through that? Is that just an opening question which leads on to other things?
It always leads to other things. I mean, I have the Tao on the yin yang on my wall because, well, it represents many things, but one of the most important things it represents is my focus on both the external and the internal. And so I'm very interested in people creating external results in the world, making more money, scaling your business, growing your team, whatever it is. And my path to creating all of that is to you start there and you say, well, if that needs to happen, then what actions do you need to take? Who do you need to be? And if that's the case, then what needs to shift inside here? And so we start on the outside, I want to make more money, whatever, and we go, we look inside. What is it about you that needs to shift? Your thinking, your seeing, your way of being, that's going to lead to creating all that. And so it always leads to the internal conversation. I'm always working on the individual, but then it always ties back out to the external manifestation because I'm as interested in transforming a person as I am in creating stuff in the world.
And is it passion that people ask you for? In other words, I'm asking you about money, but actually what I'm really asking you is I want more fulfillment. I want to be more passionate. I want to have more meaning in my life. Is that where all roads lead?
Sometimes it's not as much anymore because I used to help people find their passion when I first got into this business and had a YouTube video with a couple 100,000 views about it. But I actually moved away from that because a lot of the people that are looking for passion are a little bit more lost than I want to be working with now. And so nowadays it's a bit more people that they have a mission, they have purpose, they want to increase their capacity to create in the world. So they have a sense that they have more power in them to generate more, to make more happen, to fulfill their mission in a bigger way. And then also they want to maintain or increase their fulfillment in it. But it's not like I'm broken and I'm lost. It's more like I want to enjoy the quality of my work, enjoy it even more, but I also want to do more and achieve more.
And you talk about the alpha and the omega. So yin and yang is something that you mentioned just now, but there's also a number of studies that you've done about this concept of, you know, the beginning and the end. And is that part of the process that you try and explain to your clients?
I don't really have a process, but it's one of the ideas that has emerged or kind of been created through the work of looking at both sides. You know, for me, Alpha and Omega represents competitiveness and collaborativeness. And it comes from, I won't go into it now, but it goes into the whole idea of in a wolf pack, there's both an alpha wolf and an omega wolf, and the alpha kind of leads competition, omega leads collaboration. And so one of the things, it's an example of a theme that's in my work, which is helping leaders to integrate seeming opposites. You know, one of the things that's difficult for a lot of people to do is to hold seemingly opposing ideas in the mind at the same time. Especially in the Western world, we have a very much of an either or worldview. And if it's either this or that, Republicans or Democrats, you know, black or white, like, and so when people can begin to have a both and way of being and seeing, they can hold what seem like opposite ideas in mind at the same time. They actually access a transcendent way of being. So when I can be both competitive and collaborative in the same moment, then I access a level of leadership, for example, or entrepreneurship or creating that's much more powerful than just one or the other. I know that's very conceptual and philosophical and can make it more pragmatic if you'd like, but.
And again, how do you start? So the most, what is the biggest challenge for you? And I know you have a very large and sort of growing client base, but is it the difficulty of getting all of this information, all these concepts across in one or two sound bites, for want of a better word, just to get people to understand the breadth and the depth of assistance you can provide?
So there's a difference between the videos and the content that I put out and the work I actually do. So the work I actually do with people is conversation. That's what I get paid for being in conversation with people. And so the sharing of ideas is dynamic. It's decided moment by moment. I don't have a list or a plan or anything. I have an imaginary file cabinet of thousands of ideas and concepts that have been created in previous conversations. And I have a blank canvas of, for this conversation, we may create something new or we may do both. So sometimes I'm pulling out an old idea and sharing it in the moment where it feel like it would serve. And other times I'm generating a brand new distinction or an idea with that person in real time. But all of it is decided by what's unfolding in that conversation, the dialogue between me and that individual.
And are there common roadblocks that you see within what one might describe as alpha leaders?
Well, yeah. I mean, the most common roadblock is just being pigeonholed into that way of being. and seeing that being collaborative as an alternative to being competitive. And that if I'm being collaborative, then I'm not being competitive. That is the roadblock, is seeing the one or the other. So let's make it more pragmatic. Like if I'm thinking if I only can be competitive, then I can't actually connect with people as powerfully as I could otherwise, because I'm just trying to win and beat everybody. I'm trying to push and challenge, and I can't actually feel what people really need. And I think if I do that, I mean, like the classic, you know, you think of like the father figure that's very, you know, what's the word? Not paternal, but like patriarchal, where it's like, you have to follow my rules and this and that, but they're so disconnected from their son or their children.
Yeah.
And then they're missing out on something. And then you think, well, if I was doing the other way, I'd be too soft. But what you don't get is that by actually opening up and connecting and hearing your employees and feeling what's going on in them, then you can actually inspire and draw out of them more competitiveness and more willingness to go and get the thing than you could if you just were cold and didn't feel any of it. So the two things fold into each other.
And this, as you say, is this imaginary file cabinet of ideas, concepts, processes that you've developed. Where do they come from?
From the conversations that I'm in. So it's all like, my business works like this. It's really simple. I sit with somebody, most often an entrepreneur or leader. I ask them what's going on in their world. And just like when I was a little kid, when I used to take apart VCRs and I'd be like, oh, my mind just goes, and I can just see how everything works and everything goes together. So I study physics. I'm interested in systems and complexity. I can see, as soon as somebody starts speaking, within minutes, I can start to see their whole world. It's like crystals just start forming out of them. I can see how they're seeing everything, their relationship, their marriage, their business, their employees. It's like it all just starts to unfold for me. And as I see how their world exists, then I can start to point to things for them, and they start to become able to see things they couldn't see before. And then we generate ideas in that conversation. An idea serves them that's been created there. And I also keep that in memory. And it's like, at some point, that's going to serve somebody else. Or I don't want to forget it. So I'm just going to end the session and turn on my video and make a Facebook live video and just capture that. And it goes into an inventory on my YouTube channel. I've got like 250 videos, but each of them are simple insights, simple distinctions that have been created in a conversation with a real person that's facing a real thing.
And so is this a third scientific leg, as it were, which is human engineering?
Yeah, recently I've been using like what is it, if I were to like name what I do, and like I was like mind programmer, human engineering, that kind of fits, you know. I take a very kind of left brain approach to a right brain experience of people. So I'm very much feeling into what's going on for people, trusting my intuition, having a philosophical, spiritual kind of perspective of things. Then I'm like, well, how can I pragmatize this? How can I turn this into something structural that you can action, that you can see? And so, I think that's a good idea. Human engineering, mind programming, those are both good terms, I would say, for what I do.
But is that where the alchemy lies, in the blending of the metaphysical and the absolute?
I usually focus on the heat aspect of it, but the alchemy is obviously also about the ingredients. You know, when you turn lead into gold, there's a thing called tincture that you put in that changes it. And so maybe what my input is that we're getting a bit metaphysical, but
the important thing is just, it's being able to almost put people on their back foot. So these are guys that are all top of the tree, alpha lead.
Yeah.
And you have this ability, I think, just with one or two penetrating questions, really to go to the source code of their programming.
Absolutely. That's what I'm always looking for. I said, we're doing operating system level reprogramming. I'm not interested in application level conversation, because you could spend a year working on that same thing and you still have the same bug keeps showing up. So I want to go down to the base level code. I just to give you an example. And also I want it to be challenging and cutting, like you were just saying. So I had a guy I was coaching recently, a leader of a multinational organization. He's got offices in 50 countries around the world. And when they have a bit of a federation type policy, government, or we could say within the organization, where each of the countries have some say in creating the global initiative and the global plan for the year. And so he was talking about the stress of bringing together these meetings with leaders from 50 different countries. And of course, it's going to be difficult. And they're all going to argue because they're from 50 different countries. It's like doing the UN. It's like, you can't expect people not to debate. And like most people would just nod along, like I'm nodding and you're nodding along. Yeah, of course, that's really challenging. Let me try to support you with that. But my response to him was the one I always take, which was that he is actually creating the dynamic where people are arguing. He's like, what are you talking about? Even if I wasn't there, they'd still be arguing. 50 countries, blah, 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 blah. Right. But when you're my client, I'm focused on one thing and one thing only. It's the aspect of influence that you have in every situation that you're experiencing in your world and your business. Because you do have influence. You have. It's not saying you completely create that and it's all in your control, but you have influence on that. And your influence is the only place you have agency and power to change it. So I'm going to play the game with you called You Are Creating That, because that keeps you focused on your influence. And so I said, I challenged him. I was like, no, you're actually creating that. How are you doing it? But I hang with attention, container, heat. Let's find out. And by sitting with that long enough, we actually, well, actually, you know what? By buying into the story that everybody's going to argue, I'm actually supporting it. And every time they're arguing, I make time and take their call and I get frustrated, which creates more tension. And so we found a bunch of things. And then we took all of that content. And then we actually pragmatically created a new strategy in his leadership to dissolve all that and to create something new.
And how important has your world travels been in enabling you to see people and things from a different perspective?
That's a good question, because I think that there's something to the diversity of my experiences, which lends itself to my ability to see patterns. As I said years ago, like going from country to country and seeing people being so devout to religions and beliefs and stuff that were so diametrically opposed to the country I was just in before, but they're just as devout. It's like, you start to snap out into a meta perspective, and you're from another country, you've traveled too. So, you know, the more places you go, the more you kind of zoom out and zoom out and zoom out. And the more you can zoom out from a situation, the more you can see the patterns and the things happening in it. So I think there's something to do with, I think it lends a lot to it, but not necessarily from the content that I've absorbed through my experiences, but the experience of zooming out and having that meta perspective.
And even though, again, that you deal with incredibly successful people, do you find that there is this lack of understanding of the power that the brain or the mind has to fool itself?
Yeah, so much. It's amazing what people are able to achieve despite not knowing how their brain works and how their mind works. But yeah, very much so. I mean, most of us are running, well, we're all running on autopilot 98% of the time, right? There's very little of our consciousness and will that's affecting our reality. And the first and most important thing is just acknowledging that and unhitching yourself from it. It's like, just relax, like take a step back. There's a book here I've read 5 times. I was just thinking of it. The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer.
Yeah.
A fantastic, beautiful book. And it's just all about letting go of all those thoughts that are just going on. It's not until we have some space from that that we can even have a choice to do anything different.
But surely, isn't that the hardest thing for people to achieve? Because it seems impossible to step outside of what is yourself.
Mm. I don't know if it's the hardest thing. I mean, it can be, it's both challenging and easy in the sense that it's easy to do it once, but it keeps coming back. So the more you practice doing it, the easier it gets. But the hardness is that I have to do it over and over again. I have to read, I have to be present.
And one of the examples that you give, I think in one of your videos, is this sort of 60 second clapping.
Oh, that's one of my old videos. Yeah.
Can you talk about that? Because that's a brilliant example of how repetition or habits change the way you think. And what I want to try and do is just.
It was like 5-6 years ago. So you do it, because I can't even remember really.
I think you were at a show in London. It was a comedy club. And you were just explaining that if you put your hands together in a clasp, so for those of you.
Oh, right.
We're in color here.
Clasp them normal.
So you put your hands together in a normal clasp, and then you sort of move your hands up one notch. So they're in this incredibly uncomfortable clasp where it feels like you're all fingers and thumbs. So you then open your hands and put your hands back into that same uncomfortable position. And you do that 60 times.
Yeah, let's do it. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 9, 10, 11, 12, 17, 18, 19, 20.
Now hold your hands apart. Now put your hands together in a clasp as you would normally.
Yeah, it feels awkward now the way it used to feel normal.
So normal now feels awkward.
Right. Yeah, it feels so much comfortable doing it the new way.
But before, when you first started it,
and it still feels awkward the original way.
And do you know what the original way is now?
I do, only because I remember, but like it doesn't feel original. Original feels the new way. I remember that. It's so cool, isn't it?
It's great because it is such a brilliant example of saying to someone, habits change the way you think. Mm-hmm. And people sort of fall off the edge of the cliff at that point because they can't relate that. But something simple and physical like that just shows that actually, yes, you know, we can train Absolutely. Our minds.
Yeah. And but even more to that point is like thinking itself is actually a habit.
Of course.
Thoughts are habits. And so in the same way that we just changed that habit of that feeling normal, we can actually change a habit of thought.
But everybody thinks that what they're doing is normal, is correct, is the right way. Mm. And I think what you're saying is through the simple application of science, in other words, understanding how the brain operates and how habits change the way you think, you can completely change someone's perspective. And so if you add direction to guidance, you then, I guess, you get success.
Yeah, you do. I mean, a great example from a recent conversation that I love sharing recently is such a simple one. It's an operating system level habit of thought. So there's a habit of thought at the operating system level that is, if you want it done right, do it yourself. That's an operating system level of thought. If you want it done right, do it yourself.
But so let's continue that thought. So again, so if the incorrect thought, or if the thought that is stopping you from achieving what you want is the same as some sort of programmatic loop.
Right.
I think all what you're saying is that combining your life experience with your knowledge and understanding of mathematics, physics, technology, science, you see things in a way that people don't, which allows you to actually spot those loops and say...
To spot those loops, right. And then we can change them. So that loop that we spotted, if you want it done right, doing yourself, is an operating system habit of thought that I spotted when the person was just speaking, you know, just an offhand comment. But that offhand comment helps me see that's some deep code, because that's going to show up as, I'm going to do this, I'm not going to hire a gardener, or I'm not going to delegate this, I'm just going to do it myself, and suddenly I'm overloaded and I'm crushed and I can't scale my business.
Exactly. So right? I think when you said at the beginning of the interview, you can see the sort of visual or physical manifestation of all these different elements of someone's character, their psyche, their operating mechanism. I think that's the real skill, the real differentiator, the thing that is the magic that you bring to the alchemy. And I'm saying this having spoken to many so-called life coaches who really regurgitate other people's sort of, you know, studied intellectualism. But your ability is to effectively see the way that these people's minds are built.
Yeah. Thank you for pointing me back to that over and over again now, because now I get your emphasis is on my seeing the opportunity of something to change, where I've been putting the emphasis on, once I've seen something, then changing it into something better. And I think both things count, but you're helping me to value the actual moment of seeing it, because if you can't see it, you can't change it.
And I think that's the real challenge. If you say to people, you have, you know, was it Gandhi said, you know, change comes from within or something like that, you know, or
let the change. Rubbish.
Yes. I think he was quite famous. But that's the hardest thing to see, isn't it? To actually look inwards and see these things. So if you're able to hold a looking glass up to people and say, do you see here? This is where your internal processing is failing you. Mm-hmm. And so these sort of little tweaks can have an enormous effect if they are at that ground level operating system.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
And so my sort of thinking then is that, is there something, do you find that, or do you think there is something more to the way that people are built? You know, particularly the successful people, is there some common element that you see in them that you don't see in other people?
Yeah, I mean, a few themes come to mind. The first is persistence, just not giving up. I mean, that's like the oldest thing in the book probably, but it's just so true. I've succeeded in this business in ways that most people that try it don't, because I didn't stop more than anything else. I think that's the thing. But another thing I've been focusing on recently, this isn't true for all people maybe, but the more you're able to make distinction and create nuance, and the more choices you have, the more you increase your granularity of like slicing up life, and you have more options you have, the more you can create with. So that's why I'm really enamored with the helping people to see difference where they didn't see it before.
So that's about perspective. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. Giving your perspective more refinement, more and more refinement.
Or is it the ability to have almost like a 360 panoramic view of who you are and seeing yourself from different angles?
Well, yeah, different angles is what helps you to see different things. So, yeah, but with more and more degrees of more subtlety, more nuance.
So I guess, I mean, and it must be quite a challenging, but also quite an uplifting experience because, you know, if I'm, you know, just sitting with you now, you can feel, you know, layers unfolding and almost like the discovery of things that one has never considered before. Do you get that kind of, you mentioned earlier that you had someone in tears, hopefully for a very positive reason.
Yeah.
It wasn't because of the bill you gave them or something like that.
No, it was a divorce, a pending divorce, a breakup. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, more often than not, people are tearing up. Just because sometimes of the shock of meeting yourself for the first time in a long time, seeing something that's meeting who you really are, what your capacity is, how much you've had a habit of thought that's been keeping you back from what you're really capable of. It's a mixed experience of both relief and kind of a bit of sadness for the time that's passed where you've been, you know, not accessing that. So it's quite common. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, no, that's again, another huge thing is this feeling that that without that exploration, you've lost all this time that you can't have back.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so valuable to sort of take this on at an early stage. And again, how does this lead into your advice to people who, and how they surround themselves with people? Because obviously talking to you, you can have all sorts of insights into the way that one's mind works. But if you surround yourself by people of a different attitude, is that toxic? Is that truly toxic?
If people are, well, I don't know about different attitude, it might be a different, better attitude, but if it's not a good attitude, it would be toxic. I think that, you know, I love that the old adage of that we're become the average of the people we spend time with. So yeah, I always try to surround myself with great people. That's why I've met you and we're both member of a great organization. And I think we're both there for that reason, is that we know that we rise to the level of the people we're with.
And so do you find any common things like sort of motivational issues? Are there, do you uncover base fundamental, again, sort of cornerstone issues that you help people with?
Yeah, of course. People are never motivated enough to do the things they want to do. But I don't really buy into motivation. I'm not big into like push. I actually stand for the idea that everything is easy and miraculous. I live as if that's true. And what I mean by that is if they're never experiencing something as difficult or challenging and I think I need to push myself, then I'll just stop and I'll back up and I'll say, there's a way that this is going to be really easy and I'm not going to do it until I figure out what that is. Doesn't mean I just forget about it. Now my focus is on how can this be easy and effortless? Otherwise I'm not doing it. So for me, I'm much more interested in helping people to not need motivation than to get more of it, but they come with that as the problem.
And it's again, is it resonance? Is it getting them to resonate their personal ideas with their business ideas, trying to get everything in line? Is that your objective?
No, I mean, that sounds nice too, but to get everything in line with their purpose is like, then they can get fired up about it and force themselves forward. And I'm not really interested in like creating fire to force. I mean, fire is something that burns through passion, which comes from flow because you're in action. I'd rather fire come from action than fire be generated to push me into action. And so for me, it's much more about like what just makes this feels like just effortless and easy and fun. Curiosity actually is a thing that can pull people into something. It's not a fire, but it can draw them forward. And that movement starts to create more energy. You just remove the obstacles and people will just act because our natural orientation is to act and create. We only don't when there's something in the way.
And I want to come back to this question of passion as well, because it's something that is on everybody's lips. This word that I think that very few people actually understand. What is your understanding of what it means to be passionate about what you do?
What it means to be passionate? I think it means that you're experiencing some great feeling about it, some fire, some energy, and some zest for life and some excitement. And the video that you watched from years ago, I think I said in it something to the effect of passion is created, not found. And similarly, purpose is grown, not discovered. And so I'm, you know, of course that happens. Sometimes you fall in love at first sight and maybe you can just, oh, stumble into this. This is my passion. I found it. But for most people, it's a little bit of a curiosity or a little bit of an interest, and you actually engage in it, and then action and the engagement in it creates more imagination, which takes you deeper into it. And then the fire starts to burn hotter and harder the more you do it.
So this coming back to your alchemy idea where you have...
Yeah, similar as well. Yeah.
So the ingredients are the base, the raw ingredients is the passion. So how do you deal with people on sort of a one-to-one basis, but do you have a calling, as it were? Do you feel that there's this understanding that you have that needs to be delivered to a much bigger audience?
I think that I'm probably coming to that and soon, but I'm in a phase right now of what I consider artisanship, where I'm just focused on getting better and better at my craft and being the best in the world at what I do. And maybe someday there will be a concept or a theme that emerges that I want to share with the world, but I'm not there. Right now I'm interested in helping people to really come to see who they are and what they're capable of and access more of their power, and to do so from a place of freedom, which is much more loving. Because if my mission is anything, it's because when people are doing that, not only are they fulfilled, which is great, they're having more success, which is great, but they're actually creating a better and more beautiful world. Because when they're not creating from fear, they're actually generating something beautiful.
And that feeling of abundance, I think we've all heard about the theory of abundance as opposed to the theory of scarcity. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you see that working in action?
Yeah, I don't really know. The theory of the way that abundance is most often talked about is like having this blind faith that everything is there and will come to you. And I think
it's more of the fact that rather than, as you said at the beginning, rather than taking and it's a much more collaborative approach. So sharing, doing work for other people on the basis that is the way to grow, rather than trying to battle against everyone. And my question really is these alpha leaders, these senior business leaders that you work with, are they more in favor of that sort of sharing collaborative economy?
Yeah, I think in general, people are more that I work with are more at least open to the possibility that not just being out there to crush and kill everybody and to play a zero sum game. Like, if you're all you can see is a zero sum game, then you probably won't even hear me. You would have switched this off by now. And so I live in a world where positive sum games exist, and that absolutely involves sharing and cooperating and collaborating to create more. But what contained within that is competition. I think competition serves, but it's not an exclusive way of being or operating. It's not in nature either. It's just hierarchies are one aspect of nature. You can stand right here and you can watch flocks of birds fly by in like just a group where there's no leader. And you can watch birds fly by in a formation. And it's just a hive and there's hierarchy. And both things are natural. Collaboration, competition, both things are natural.
Brilliant. Well, I would love to spend hours just trying to sort of deconstruct all these things. But I think the most important thing that I've got out of this is just your view and your approach is so utterly different from pretty much anybody else. Is that that ability not really just to go through standard questions and regurgitate another approach. It is the ability through simple questioning to see how people are built. And then, you know, step by step to tweak, to adjust, to recalibrate so that they can go back on and truly find the real power, the real energy they have.
Thank you for sharing that. That's great.
Well, then, you know, but JP, my next question really is how do people get in touch with you? How do they get hold of you? How do they find out more?
jpmorganjr.com. is my website, and JP Morgan JR is my handle everywhere online, any social media website, LinkedIn, Facebook, everything, Instagram, JP Morgan JR. You can find me and say hi.
And I think, you know, I hope people reach out to you because I know that they will enjoy this journey of discovery with you. And you know, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show, and I look forward to seeing you again and spending more time discussing this with you.
Will do. Thank you so much, Matthew.